Hello. As controversy has swirled around the Access to Work scheme, which is designed to help disabled people get jobs and thrive in them, we've been pressing for some time to talk to Minister for Disability and Social Security, Sir Stephen Timms. The Department for Work and Pensions now wants to talk to us about the statistics surrounding the scheme. So let's hope we both have time to get our messages across and our questions answered. So Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you, Peter.
You're quoted in a disability magazine as having instructed officials to consider applications for access to work support scrupulously. That sounds like code for spending less money to me.
Well, the figures show, the figures we published today, that we're spending more money on access to work. The number of people benefiting from it has gone up by 10% over the last year. And it is a hugely important scheme. It enables tens of thousands of people to be in work who wouldn't otherwise be able to. But we have inherited some quite serious problems with it, and we want to address those and I hope resolve them.
So it is about saving money.
No. I mean, as I say, we're spending more money this year. It's gone up by 10%, these figures show, and 10% more people benefiting from it.
You were always telling people that it was a best-kept secret. It shouldn't be a best-kept secret, and as many people should know about it and benefit from it as possible.
Yeah, well, there has been a huge surge in demand. So I think people are finding out about it, which is a good thing. But managing the applications is something the department has struggled with. So we've put over 100 extra people on administering access to work over the last year and a half or so.
That's because there were a lot of delays, weren't there?
There were a lot of delays, and there still are a lot of delays. So we put a lot more people on it, but the delays are still a problem. So that's why we think we need to rethink access to work. We consulted in our green paper earlier in the year on ideas for change. We had nearly 50,000 responses to that green paper. We're working through those at the moment. We've also set up a collaboration committee, as we call it, which is a new idea, but working directly with disabled people, people with experience of the scheme, on ideas for how we can improve it and overcome these problems.
There seems to be a bit of confusion about that, Stephen, because when we talked to the RNIB last week, they didn't seem to be very sure about whether they were part of these discussions. They obviously want to talk to you. How does the business of talking to organisations and individuals with disabilities and lived experience, how's that actually working?
Well, that is a very important part of what we're doing. And I do talk to the RNIB. If they're keen to talk to me about this, I'm keen to hear from them. But we set up the collaboration committee, which obviously is only, it's a committee. So it's only got a kind of finite number of people on it. But in order to have discussions directly with people affected and with organisations that represent them, and we want to take proper account of their views in coming forward with proposals for reform. And once we've drawn those up, we'll be talking about them and wanting to discuss them very widely.
I mean, I should make it clear, Stephen, we're constantly being told at the moment by you and DWP statements that there have been no changes in operating policy relating to things like eligibility over the last couple of years. So why are we hearing from so many visually impaired people who are saying that on reapplication for existing support, they're often being given less hours of support, less money to pay their support workers, or in some cases, having the money for support workers removed altogether?
Well, the policy has not changed at all. What has happened, and I think this is what you're picking up, is that the existing policy, which is published, the guidance, which is published, has more consistently applied over the last year or two than was sometimes the case in the past. So it's the current policy, but it's being consistently applied. And sometimes that has meant that things that have been agreed to and accommodated previously have not been on reapplication. So I think that's what you're picking up. But I do want to kind of underline that as these figures show, the number of people being supported on access to work and the amount being spent on it has significantly risen this year compared with last. And, you know, we've got to make sure we're doing the best possible job with the resources that are available.
And interestingly, I mean, you'll understand that we in Touch is particularly concerned about visually impaired people. The number is actually quite small, 3,820 in your statistics out earlier today. So we are a fairly small cost on this system.
I mean, that is a fair comment about access to work as a whole. The total number of people supported is now just over 70,000 in the most recent year. Now, you know, that's quite a small proportion of the number of disabled people in work. And I think that's one of the questions for the scheme. Is there a way of using the resources available to support a greater number of people? Certainly, we've got to overcome these massive backlogs, the very long waits people have to wait for decisions and those difficulties. We've got to come forward with proposals to address those. But I think the question of whether more people could be supported is another one we have to reflect on.
So where do you think money's being wasted? Because you obviously think it is somewhere.
I don't think money's being wasted. I think the question is whether we are getting the best possible results from the funding that's been provided. Are there ways that we could do more with that funding? And that is something we have to work out. I wouldn't characterise it as waste. But the question of, you know, are we getting the best we possibly could?
It's also being widely suggested that the government thinks that employers should bear more of the cost of access to work style support. Is that true?
There is a question, I think, about employer responsibility for paying for reasonable adjustments. And there are some employers who pay for it themselves. There are other employers who go to access to work to fund quite similar things. Now, that is a question that we need to think about in our reform proposals, whether we've got the consistency there in approach on the part of employers that we need. As you know, Sir Charlie Mayfield, who used to run John Lewis, has been doing some work for us. And his Keep Britain Working review has been looking at what more employers can do to ensure their employment opportunities are open to disabled people, people who've been out of work on health grounds in the past. And so this is something that he's been looking at as well. And that's part of, it's got to be part of the solution in the end, I think.
But just on this issue of employers, because I think this is important, it's all very well to say that the Disability Discrimination Act was passed in 1995 and companies have had responsibilities since then to make their premises accessible, etc., which they have. It's right that that's stressed. But is it really reasonable to expect an employer faced with a number of good candidates, say for a job, one of whom's visually impaired, who might need a support worker, to employ the visually impaired applicant, however good they are? Or are we saying you get the job and then you tell the employer about the support they're supposed to provide afterwards?
Well, employers have very good experience of employing disabled people. They find disabled people, including people with visual impairments, do a great job. So it's in the employer's interests to make sure that they can open up their opportunities to disabled people as well, as well as, you know, everyone else's interests. And I think getting that balance right is an important part of the changes that we need to see in the labour market over the next few years.
So if there have been no changes to operating rules to access to work so far, when can we expect them and what are they likely to be?
Well, I don't yet know what they're likely to be. As I say, we're working through the nearly 50,000 responses that we had to our consultation earlier in the year. We're working with our collaboration committee at the moment. As soon as we've got proposals arising from all of that work, we will be talking about them. I'll be very happy to talk to you about them, Peter, and we'll want to talk about them as widely as we can so that everyone has the chance to have their say and we get to the right result in the end.
But can you just give us a rough idea of when it might be? Because the welfare reform changes, we're likely to hear about those later next year, if I've understood this correctly. So you must have a time in view when you'll know when access to work changes can be publicised.
Yeah, I don't have a specific timetable for it yet. On personal independence payment, the review which I'm going to be leading will be concluded by the autumn of next year, as you say, so in about a year's time. I would expect us to be able to come forward with proposals around access to work before then, but I don't have a precise date about when it'll be.
OK, so Stephen Timms, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
Next week, we'll be returning to another topic which has been exercising you for most of this year, the changes taking place in the Macular Society, which has probably prompted one of the biggest responses to one story we've ever had. And still, your emails keep coming. This from Margaret Wendells from the Southwell branch of the Society in Nottinghamshire.
It concerns me that people are now talking about withdrawing financial support from the Society. It is a terrible dilemma. I too don't feel I want to put my money into an organisation that has treated so badly people who have helped me in so many ways and whom I consider to be friends. I understand the Society may even be spending my money on legal representation to fight my friends in court and potentially having to pay thousands in rightful compensation. Having said that, I feel the Society should be greater than the few individuals who seem bent on its destruction, for reasons which are beyond my understanding. What power do we, the members, have? We can withhold our finances and encourage our group members to do the same, but then we are adding to the problems rather than putting them right. Do they seriously think that removing the area managers fulfills the Society's vision, values, and strategy? How confident are they, giving the overwhelming negative feedback, that this constitutes good governance of a charity?
Well, with the second consultation on this now completed, we have invited back Macular Society Chief Executive Ed Holloway next week to find out what conclusions it's reached and how the Society has responded to the concerns so many of you have expressed. Just one more piece of stop press news before we go. The RNIB has recently announced the name of its new chief executive. Simon Antrobus is taking over from Matt Stringer at the beginning of next year. Since 2016, Simon has been CEO of the BBC's Children in Need project, and he has 25 years of experience working within the voluntary sector, including at Parkinson's UK and Scope. We look forward to talking to him about his plans in the near future. Meanwhile, as usual, we want to hear from you. We welcome your questions, your comments, experiences. Email intouch@bbc.co.uk or leave your voice messages on 0161 836 1338. That's it for today from me, Peter White, and producer Beth Hemmings, gearing up for a well-deserved holiday. Goodbye.